how big.
Oh, is this her email?
A petition to Barbara.
Right.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the July 5th, 2016 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. If you have cell phones or electronic devices, please silence them. That means legislators as well. There's an emergency exit to my right in the back of the room. There's one to my left in the front of the room. If there's a fire, please don't use the elevators. Would you please stand with me while we recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call, please?
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler? Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey has asked to be excused. Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
We have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'm not aware of an executive session tonight. John, Joe? Well, we'll move right ahead to privilege of the floor. Privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity for members of the public to speak to us on any topic. They're permitted up to 3 minutes. Anyone who wants to speak on privilege of the floor needs to sign a blue card and hand it to the front. At this point, I don't have any blue cards. If there's anyone out there who would like to speak, please sign a blue card. Not seeing anyone, we'll move on to the privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I see City Councilman George McGonigal out there. George, would you like to speak to us?
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Just a couple things the city's working on. Our comprehensive plan is moving on to the next stage where we look at specific areas within the city more closely and talk about how we want those neighborhoods and areas to develop over the next few years. And the first ones we're looking at are the West End and the Waterfront, which is in the first ward, and South Side in the second ward. And the economic, the planning and economic development committee will be looking at that first, and then all of council. Another thing we're working on is we got a NYSERDA grant for the microgrid feasibility. The wastewater treatment plan is to create power at, you probably already know this already, at the wastewater treatment plant. The first step is to get a grant to study whether it's feasible or not, and we've gotten that grant. So that'll proceed in coming days. The other thing I wanted to mention and thank the county for is increased revenue to the Youth Bureau from the Tompkins County Workforce Investment Board for the Tompkins Summer Youth Employment Program, which is run by the Youth Bureau. And that was a significant amount of money, $152,000 and change. And that will put more youth to work this summer, and we really appreciate that. That's all I have. you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
George, we appreciate your coming. It's important to us.
I enjoy it.
George? I see Carol first.
Hi, George. Thanks for coming. We're going to hear a presentation tonight about the draft request for proposals for the police consolidation study.
Oh, yes, that's another thing.
And I'm just wondering if you know yet what the city's process is going to be to look at that.
It's on the agenda for tomorrow's Common Council meeting, and that's about all I know. We'll be talking about it tomorrow evening.
Thanks.
Anna?
Thank you so much for coming and bringing up the microgrid project. Can you tell us a little summary of what the results were from the feasibility study at the first phase and whether the city has determined whether they're going to apply officially for the second phase?
Well, I don't think the feasibility study has been conducted yet. I may be mistaken. You always ask the hardest questions.
Yeah, the first $50,000 was granted last year for the evaluation, the initial phase evaluation. So I think the report came out maybe a month ago.
Then I don't know.
I'm curious what the city's response is.
Well, we are gonna apply for the second phase.
You are. Okay.
Martha?
Hi, George.
Hi, Martha.
Can you say a little bit more about the waterfront? You said with respect to the comprehensive plan, you're going to be looking at the waterfront. You mean the area of where the DOT is right now?
The whole waterfront from Stewart Park all the way back to the area behind Wegmans.
Okay.
So the whole thing.
So you're taking a
closer look. I mean, the comprehensive plan is kind of a big brush, and now we're going to study little brush a little bit.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
But from a number of perspectives, of economic development and neighborhood issues and just a closer look.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Dooley?
Thanks. I had occasion to sit in City Hall for a recent Planning and Development Board meeting. I went intending to learn more about the tree block proposal, but they didn't get to that during the long time I was there. Instead, there was a lot of discussion of College Town. And John Schroeder explained very clearly that there is a disconnect between the College Town plan and the zoning that's in place now. And it left the Planning and Development Board in a difficult position of having to enforce zoning that they don't agree with if they agreed with the plan. One of the things he said that was missing in between those two was the development of design guidelines. So my question to you is are design guidelines being revisited? Is there going to be an attempt to bridge these differences?
That would be a good question for Duck, because he's on the Planning Development Committee and I'm not. I should have mentioned that building in College Town is underway and There's disagreements, particularly in Lower College Town, about how things are being developed, like at 201 College Ave. Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to answer your question specifically, but ask it again. Ask Doc when he comes next in 2 weeks. And the other thing is, I should have mentioned, there appears to be another proposal for the tree block corner. And it's just ramping up. and we don't know yet what it really is, but it appears to be a similar building with a different target for renters.
All 1 to 2 bedroom and local developer, correct?
Excuse me?
It's all 1 to 2 bedroom and a local developer, from what I understood.
I think he's from Vestal. It's the same guy who built the place on the corner coming down by the tuning fork.
Seneca Way.
Seneca Way, that beautiful building. I'm sorry, I'm not better at answering your questions.
Jim Dennis.
Welcome, George. I'll help you out as much as I can here. I'm pretty familiar with the 201 College Town project and the noise around the project. And it's mostly been instigated by one person, and the majority of the planning board is in support of the project.
Yes.
And it fits in with the zoning that the city has done in the College Town area. So I think it's a very tough question, and I also know that John Schroeder talked about, literally saying to common council members, bring people into the meeting. And, we're in a box here. We have to follow the rules, and he was looking for common council members to be opposed to the project and then, change the zoning in College Town. So, and that's a dangerous thing to do, because if you begin to change zoning while things are going on, you're opening yourself up for a giant lawsuit that they're going to win. So, from my point of view, I don't live in College Town. My kids grew up there. They seem to be trying to do some things there to make it into a place that, get rid of the fire trap buildings and put some things up that people can use. So.
Carol?
Thank you for coming, George. I really appreciate it. We don't expect you to have all the answers, but we really appreciate that you come. I just want to correct any misinformation that might be out there. While I appreciate the attempt to give us some more information, Jim, as somebody who's on two neighborhood listservs, I can assure you that the discussion about the pros and cons, mostly cons, of the scale of the development on that 200 block in College Town is not.
I didn't want to mention
can I finish my
the other
sentence,
people,
please? I'd like
frankly
to finish my sentence. Is not just coming from one person. There were really multiple, many people who have concerns. And, we make decisions, and I think that we know factually that you're correct, that building decisions get made based on the stipulations, the zoning and other stipulations that are in effect at the time that an application is made. And if, it was permitted. So, we can't dispute that, but whether the neighborhood supports it is subject to a lot of interpretation.
Thank you for correcting me.
Okay. I don't think we can get into a debate on College Town zoning here tonight. Rich John.
George, thank you. I think you're doing a great job answering questions, by the way. Do you know when the next meeting is that's going to concern the 201 Dryden Road?
Planning Board?
Yeah.
No, but it's on the city website.
Okay, thanks.
And the Planning and Development Committee will be meeting the first Wednesday after Common Council, so that's a week from tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Are there any legislators who want to talk tonight? Dan Klein.
I just want to put in a plug for Danby Fun Day, which is this coming Saturday, July 9th. There's a parade that starts at 10:30 that the county will be participating in. And then the chicken barbecue starts up around noon. There's music, there's games, there's vendors. It goes on all day. It's at the Danby Fire Department on Route 96B in Danby.
That's a good time.
It is a good
time.
Remember
last year. It was great. Other folks would like to speak on privilege of the floor. Martha Robertson.
On June 18th, Dorothy Park died. She was 103. She didn't make one. Her mother got to 109, so I guess, you know, she must have had a lot of health problems. I don't know. She was, of course, the wife of Roy Park, who had created a, you know, a media and industrial fortune with his businesses. But when he died, the Park Communications was folded into the Park Foundation, sold, and the proceeds went to the Park Foundation. A lot of people, I mean, I went to the memorial service last week at the reception. You know, I kept seeing the directors of nonprofits from the community. I thought, oh right, yeah, they gave to them. Oh right, yeah, they gave to them. The impact of the Park Foundation and Triad Foundation as well, the other family foundation, has been untold in this community in small ways and large ways. Untold in many ways because at the beginning they were doing everything anonymously. It was years before they, for whatever reason, it was years before the family was willing to kind of say, this is the Park Foundation. If you watch PBS, they're on many, many programs on public television, especially Bill Moyers, for example, who was spoke at the service. So, but I was most touched. I mean, I've known for a long time about that kind of impact, but I was also touched at the memorials at the reception to talk to, for example, one of the people who sort of did house repairs and stonework around her house, and somebody I've known for many years. And he said she was the kindest, most humble and generous person that he'd ever worked for, and that if it was a hot day, she made sure that somebody brought out a tray of lemonade for him. If it was too cold in the winter, she would say, come on in, Eugene, come on and work inside. He said, I don't have anything to do inside. We'll find something for you. She just in many ways, small and large, really cared for people and animals. She was very generous to the SPCA. I believe it was a couple of million dollars given to the library, the public library. So we were
$3 million.
Okay, I don't want to lose a million here, give or take, right? So, you know, her impact and the impact of the foundations on this community have been tremendous, and on North Carolina, especially a lot of institutions in that state. Cornell, Ithaca College, as well. But she'll be missed on a personal level, and I'm sure her legacy will live on for many, many years.
Thank you, Martha. I think she had peacocks, too, didn't she?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anna Callis.
Thank you, Martha. That was wonderful to hear all of that. And I wanted to just add a thank you to the city, I think CFCU, American Red Cross. I know Deb Mullenhoff from the City Common Council played a huge role in the Ithaca is Love Fest, and I just wanted to give a shout-out. It was a beautiful event where a bunch of people got together all wearing colors of the rainbow to take a picture to send down to Orlando. But it was also a fundraiser, and that's something that we're going to continue to do, so to have everybody keep their eyes open in support of the LGBTQ community. So that was on the 30th, and quite an amazing event. And also there was something that came up recently from the Tompkins County Workers Center, and I just wanted to make a note of it. They have a contest going on, Living Wage Visionary Contest, and we've talked a lot about the living wage in our community and our support of it in the county, and they're really trying to do outreach in Tompkins County to get people to be aware of it, to support it, to talk about it, to envision how we could make it happen. And the contest is a $2,500 prize. It is hosted by, I think, Sustainable Tompkins, the Tompkins County Workers Center, the Office of Human Rights, and I think there might be several other sponsors of this event. And they're looking for people to, citizens, to talk about how a living wage would affect them, their families, their community, and tell their personal story. And I think that that's really beautiful. So I have it posted on my Facebook page. I encourage everybody to look at it, post it, share it, and encourage people to participate. So it's just my one other comment.
Thank you, Anna. Others would like to speak. Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to thank Martha for what she said about Ms. Park, obviously. I work for Roy Park Jr., her son. I was also at the event, and it was great to see so many people and just so many people who have been touched by one life. It's kind of amazing to see that. And really, people from all walks of life. That was the one thing that I'll say always impressed me about the Parks and continues to, is that, I mean, they're friends with everybody. I'll go to something, and I'll see them at like a community event, and it's nice to see a family so kind of involved in their community. So again, very a big loss for the community, but what a life well lived.
Anyone else? Okay, let's move on. I have some appointments to the Workforce Development Board. Isla Burbank, forgive me if I mispronounce his last name, Mohammed Abdelrahim, and Kenneth Smith. The last one was easy to pronounce. One thing I did want to report on was that last week there was a meeting at the request of the New York State Corrections Commission with a group of us. It was our sheriff, Ken Lansing, and our undersheriff, the Captain Bunce, who directs the jail. Also, Joe Mariana was there, Martha Robertson, and myself. And three members from the Corrections Commission regional area came down to talk to us. They've been making inquiry about our variances at the jail. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong here, that we have variances to have 18 additional beds in the jail, mostly double bunking. And they don't like variances. They would like to see progress toward the elimination of those variances. I thought they're reasonable to talk to. We made a strong case, thanks to Captain Bunce and to Administrator Mariana, who had both papers and figures and calculations on things that we are doing in the alternatives to incarceration realm to reduce the number of people that are in the jails. They did tell us some things we hadn't heard before, or at least I hadn't heard before, I want to say that. One was that there are apparently only two jails in New York that have the kind of variances that we have, which are our area variances for the cells. In other words, we're double bunked in some of our cells, but there's a certain square footage there, and the square footage for two inmates is less than the standard, and that's the variance. Double bunking itself is not a problem. You can have a large cell with enough square footage per inmate and have double bunking. That's permitted. But it's when you get a smaller cell like we have that they have questions about that. There was some discussion about whether we need more cells. They talked about the idea of having a pod, which would add a number of cells. We've talked about that over the years. This legislature decided not to go in that direction quite a number of years ago, but it keeps coming back. And at the end of the meeting, I think, correct me wrong, I think the indications we have is that our variances will be probably extended another 6 months, and then we will have time during that period of time to put together more information about what, for example, our new programs such as the reentry program might be able to do for our jail population. So I just wanted to bring you folks up. Martha or Joe, you're welcome to add to that. Will, you got your hand up.
Mike, you mentioned something I'm not familiar with. You said the discussion of pods. What did you mean by that?
It's a different way of having cells situate so that you basically have, say, 45 cells. You may have two stories, but you can have, because it's an open area in front of the cells, you can have fewer jail guards in a pod, and they can actually guard more prisoners in that situation.
It's not staffing as much as the physical the constraints of the building, correct? We would have to change the nature.
It would mean a pod, you'd have to put on a whole an addition,
yes,
basically.
Yes, right. Thank you.
They also made clear that, for example, we added 7 beds, not 7 cells, when we made the decision to change the indoor rec to an outdoor rec. Martha?
Yeah, and the idea of a pod sounds like, well, that's a minimal addition, but if it adds another 45 possible beds, which is the idea, then you are probably going to then have to expand the kitchen, expand the sally port, expand the program areas, expand the medical. That's more than a 45% increase in, you know, in the capacity of the jail. So it's a very big deal. I think we had a good presentation. I think we're lucky to have sheriff and the jail administration that support the initiatives that were just getting started. This just really increases the pressure to try to make those programs work. And, you know, they don't necessarily think that our programs will fail, but they kind of feel like, yeah, look, sooner or later you're going to have to build a bigger jail. So let's get on with it. So we're going to try to answer those questions.
Carol, Diana.
So before we went ahead with the decision to build the rec area and make those 7, convert to make those 7 additional beds, we met with them, and I thought there was a commitment on their part to take this whole discussion, that what we did was going to satisfy them for a longer period of time than this. What was the period of time that was discussed back then? How long ago was that?
I can't answer that. I don't know. Anyone know about a meeting like that? Joe?
I don't know if there's a meeting. I think there was an assurance by Commissioner Beilein on the Commission on Corrections that this would be taken as a good thing, that this is in fact an important contribution to reducing the overcrowding situation there, that there would be some relief. I'm not sure that there was a period of time that was specified in terms of that assurance. I think it was pretty clear that they would not immediately reduce our variance by 7 beds. So if we add 7, they're going to bring our variance down by 7. I think that assurance was given at that time, at least not in the near term. But again, I don't know that there was any date certain in terms of how long that would last.
But there was a sense that this was going to satisfy them for a while. Am I mistaken?
For a while, I think, you know, I don't want to stray too far afield here. I think I think they have been clear for a very long time that they don't like variances. And so they've encouraged us to do the ATIs. They've encouraged us to do the 7 beds. In the hope that we can get the number of people that we double bunk and board out down to something that doesn't require the variance. So it's always been on their long-term horizon that they would like to get us back down to the permitted level.
I have Anna next.
Just so I understand you guys, I'm coming in this halfway through a conversation, but the 7 beds you're referring to, are those the double bunks? No. Is that the variance? What are these seven beds?
Seven beds are the ones that we added within the last year or so, where we created the rec center outside and we converted a program room into a dorm.
Okay.
So we put seven beds in that dorm. So there are other parts of the jail where if you walk through, you'll see that there are literally bunk beds where we are double bunking people.
How many, when that, we have 6 months, when that variance goes away, how many rooms will be affected where they're too small for the double bunks that currently are there?
Well, again, ultimately, they want us, they've given us a variance for 18 extra beds, so they'd like to see that 18 go to zero at some point in time.
So there's 18 double beds, bunk beds, that we need to deal with. And have we done, when we were putting together the reentry program, I'm assuming that part of that was an evaluation of other programs that existed in other communities, and do we have any sense of what we might expect with respect to reduction in recidivism based on programs that exist throughout the country? Has there been any evaluation of existing precedent?
Martha, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, the reentry subcommittee that reported before we, last year, before we asked to put 100,000 in and had asked for them to do a plan, they looked at programs, you know, in other cities and other places, and felt that we've made a lot of good steps, but there was a lot more we could do. The new reentry coordinate, the new plan, will have a data component where that person or people who are involved would be tracking numbers, and I think the first thing to know is how many people in our custody come back more than once a year, or come back more, you know, more than once every 3 or 5 years. So
we have a baseline.
So we have a baseline. And then if you say, okay, how many of those are because of drug issues, and if we had a detox center, they might go somewhere else. How many are because they have no housing, and if we had supportive housing, they might go somewhere else. So it takes a, you know, kind of deep dive, but.
Right. So what my thinking is, for me, I'm thinking timeline. If we have a sense of the performance of programs throughout the country, and there's a sort of average, you know, evaluating on a small city scale, expected reduction in you know, repeat offenses that end up going to jail, we'd have a sense of the performance that we might expect with ours. And the reason I'm saying that is because if the impact of our program happens a year after the timeline requirement for making a decision for the jail, then we have, you know, it's going to be a really complicated situation. So if we have at least an expectation, then we can put that into our plan. That's sort of where my brain is going on that one.
Joe?
That's what they're going to be looking for in the next variance. So in this variance, I think they were impressed by the amount of things that we already have in place and the additional things that are being put in place right now. They made it clear that the next time we ask for a variance, which is going to be right around the corner, they're going to want to see metrics and milestones on those. So just like you said with reentry, fine, it's great that we're doing a reentry program. What's our expectation about reductions, and when would we think those reductions might occur?
Okay.
And then they'll hold us accountable to those. They'll watch us over time to see how we're doing on those metrics. So that is the next step.
I look forward to seeing those.
Great. Thank you.
Peter Stein.
I can't remember anymore what I was going to ask. So.
I'll take that as a pass. Anybody else? Thank you. Let's move to reports from our staff. Our county administrator is Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Michael. I just have a couple of items on tonight. The first is not about the RFP for the consolidation. It's to bring you up to speed on the court's task force, which will meet again tomorrow for the 25th time. I think it'll be the last meeting of this group. They are getting pretty close to finishing a draft report that'll be presented to TCOG sometime probably in late July or early August. I think you're going to find a couple of things that are pertinent to the conversation we just had about trying to keep our jail populations low. Even though there's some talk about the structure of the justice court system, specifically the idea of creating a DWI part where DWI cases would be diverted to a single central court. So there are some structural recommendations. There's also a number of recommendations that relate to the diversion of people from jail in the belief that if you can reduce the number of cases heard by the town and village courts, there might be an opportunity to save costs by reduced hours for the judges, reduced staff, and so forth. So in the report, I think you'll see an endorsement of the LEAD program, which this legislature has talked about, which is law enforcement assisted diversion to help keep people out of jail. I think you'll hear commentary about encouraging justices to release people who were charged with misdemeanors on their own recognizance as opposed to bail, and where bail is set, and they will encourage that that be a rare situation in the case of nonviolent misdemeanors. The suggestion will be to keep bail levels to the OAR maximum threshold so that OAR can assist people in being released from jail as quickly as possible. So there are a number of things in this report that are not only related to the town and village court system, which was kind of the original basis of the charge, but also will if enacted, really contribute to the diversion of people from jail and hopefully to some of those metrics, reduce the number of people that are in the jail and help us on the variance situation. So that, again, that's kind of an advanced preview of what to expect when that report is completed. And bless this group who has stuck together for 25 meetings over longer than a year to put this this report together. The posted item on my report tonight is about the police consolidation RFP. This is something that we went fairly deep into at the last meeting, and that came after a public safety committee discussion about the draft RFP. At the last meeting, I think you encouraged us to take the foot off the accelerator, to give this a little time for reflection, to take a look at what's in the RFP, and specifically to allow the public an opportunity, having this posted on our agenda, to weigh in if they chose to about the way the RFP has been drafted. So that's really an opportunity that we have tonight. I'm not going to go long on an overview of the RFP again, but I do want to hit some points that I think are key as we look at this. First, at the last meeting, there was a concern about how quickly we were moving. Again, our goal was to get it out by June 30th. We've agreed that's a little too quick, and what we're doing right now is an important part of the process. At the same time, for context, this is certainly not a new conversation. The discussions, quiet or informal as they may be, the idea of a city-county law enforcement consolidation go back several years, I know. So it's not new to the conversation. It's certainly new in terms of the seriousness of the effort. I'll remind you, too, that it got a lot of impetus through what the governor encouraged all local governments to do over the past several years, which is to take a hard look at the way you've organized services and give careful thought to whether there are ways to realign, to do things differently that might improve the quality of service and also reduce the cost of service. So this is very much in keeping with that. In fact, if you recall, this was a part of our government efficiency proposal that we gave to the state, where we thought we could save money if this was enacted and allowed that the tax freeze rebate to be issued to taxpayers over the last year. So, again, the pace of this, we have to be very sensitive about the pace. But in terms of the long-term perspective, this is something that we've been talking about for some time. With respect to the RFP and the process itself, I just want to go back through the steps that this involves. And to make sure that I'm clear, and if I'm not clear, force me to be clear, because I think it's important that we understand the progression here. This study will be a first step. So we are hoping to hire a consultant who will study the benefits and the costs, the pros and cons, of three basic options and maybe one or two more. And it's a relatively clinical approach. Pros and cons, benefits and costs. Cost and quality would be considered. The three options that we've stated are the obvious ones. The first is the consolidation of some functions. And we talked about some easy examples that everybody always talks about when they do this. One is training. One could be investigation. You might have a central investigation unit that serves all of the municipal departments. So we want the consultant to look at functional consolidations like that. Inventory them, look at the benefits and the costs, look at the pros and the cons on cost and quality. So that's one option. The second option is more fundamental. It's a full consolidation of all of the participating departments. City, county, could be the villages if they choose to stay in. Full consolidation, but over time. By attrition. So as an officer of one agency retires or leaves, that position is refilled by the county police department. So there's a 20-year police retirement plan. Over the period of 20 years, you would assume that you could do a full consolidation if you do it that way. The third consolidation option that they would look at, and it's outlined in the RFP, is more immediate. It's a dissolution of municipal police agencies and an expansion of the county law enforcement operation. So that would occur in a very quick way. Would happen. Those are the three primary options. And then we've said to the consultant in the RFP, if you could think of anything else that you think is important to this conversation and analysis, we'd want to hear that too. So through this study, those are the things that will be looked at by the consultant. The consultant won't say, this one is the best one. The consultant will only say, here are the relative pros and cons, benefits and costs. What happens next? So the report's now done. What happens next? What happens next is the report comes to you. And the question to you will be, do you have a preferred option? So of these things that the consultant will look at, do you have a preference? And a preference could be, yeah, our preference is we don't want to do anything. That could be one of the choices made. Or it could be another one of these options. And that same question will be put to the governing bodies of all the participating agencies. What do you want to do? Do you have a preferred option? If the answer is you have a preferred option other than the status quo, then we need the authority through you to proceed to do an implementation plan. What's that going to look like? What will the specific things be that we need to do to affect the recommendation that you've made? At that point, the door opens to additional state funding. Now remember, our grant could be upwards of $1.1 million, but the state only gave us $50,000 in the front end to do this first study. So once we move to an implementation plan, the door opens to additional state funding to go deep, to bring either the first consultant in or another consultant in to help us put together an implementation plan. How do we do this? Now, I should have said before I closed out the last part of this, when you're making your decision about your preferred option, I think everyone senses there is going to be extensive public input at that time. Extensive. You're going to want it. You're going to want to know how the public feels about this. So again, now we're developing an implementation plan. And by the we, I think we'd have to figure out who that we is. Certainly all the participants and representatives of them, with help from a consultant, at least one. What happens then? What happens when the implementation plan is done? It comes back to you. So you still haven't made a decision about whether you're going to go forward. It comes back to you. And you will at that point decide, is this something that we want to do or not? And again, at that point, you would expect extensive public input at that time as well. So as we look at this, we think there's tremendous opportunities for public input. We've created one during the RFP, during the first study itself, an opportunity to hear from the public about what is important to them. Because for the consultant to understand quality factors, it can't just be that one person's definition of quality. That person should hear from the community about what the community values, how they define quality. So that opportunity would exist during that study process and can be incorporated in the way the consultant does the report. So those are kind of the ABCs, and if you decide at the end of that, after the implementation plan is presented, you want to do something, then door number three opens for the state funding. Now comes an opportunity to get the rest of the $1.1 million to help us pay for things that may be associated with a consolidation plan. Building, it could be bodies, it could be any number of things that might be available at that point. So that's the progression that we're putting in place here, beginning with the selection of a consultant who will do that descriptive, not proscriptive, study of the options available to us. So that's where we are. The plan is, after the conversation we had 2 weeks ago, the plan is to bring the RFP with any changes that have been suggested and incorporated back to the Public Safety Committee that meets on the 21st, I think. And we would ask the Public Safety Committee to approve it, to consider it and approve it. So you may recall that my comments a couple of weeks ago were that we just wanted to go forward. This came out of that discussion, and it would go to Public Safety, and we would ask the Public Safety Committee to approve the RFP, and at that point we would go. That's my report.
All right. Let's take Jim and then Rich.
That brings to mind the question, George, and I will ask you. You said you're meeting on this tomorrow. Are you going to vote tomorrow to approve your part of the plan?
Negative. It's an update.
It's an update.
It's not.
Okay. Thank you.
Rich, John?
Joe, I had two questions. One is, what time is the meeting tomorrow for the court committee?
4:30, and it will be in the old jail conference room.
And I assume on page 12 of the agenda packet with the dates, those are all going to move forward a little bit?
It will now, yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. And I'd also say thank you for adjusting your schedule to just be double cautious and give the public a chance if they wanted to come in tonight to look at the RFP. Obviously, nobody's come in, which I guess is a good sign that people aren't up in arms yet. But there'll be plenty of opportunity to speak to this issue. Thank you.
Martha?
Thanks, Mike. Thank you, Joe. And I guess Paula had a lot to do with this, and yes, thanks to Paula for pulling it together. So I understand the Public Safety Committee will look at, like, sort of relatively more detailed questions, but I suppose Dooley might mention this. I heard her ask this the other day. Should Ithaca College, Cornell, and TC3 be mentioned at all? Because they have law enforcement. Doesn't TC3 have? They have some kind of law enforcement.
Yep.
Bodies. I don't know, even if it's just mentioned in the introduction that...
We certainly could. The only reason we didn't, they're not eligible for any of this. We can't count them toward the funding. They're not eligible for any funding. But they certainly are part of the law enforcement community, so we could add them.
Okay. I'm looking now at packet page 8, where you've got the three structural options. So if you... if there were partial consolidation, let's say the villages wanted to, but the city didn't, or any mix of those, that's contemplated and that's available to be pursued, right? It is.
We aren't specific in that. I don't know that there's a reason that we could not be specific. That willing parties, we could look at options that relate to willing parties.
Okay. And then the next page, it talks about one line about governance structure. Now, legally, we need to maintain a sheriff who maintains the jail, right? And does that have to be by our charter, we have to have an elected sheriff. Does, under governance structure, do you expect or ask that consultants will talk about leadership? Or do you think that's like a separate question that would come later down?
Yes, the latter.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Carol, Peter, Anna. Carol?
Thank you. I have, since this is our opportunity, if we're, I can't attend the public safety meeting on that date, and since this was in here, first of all, I did have some calls from constituents on this, so it's not that there was no interest at all, and one of the specific questions I got was I don't see what the specific criteria are in here that we'll look at as elected officials to help. What are the things we feel we need to know before we can make our decision to move forward? So I will just put that out there. For my own reading of this, I have some areas I wanted to comment on. One had to do with the purpose. We talk about identifying possible costs and benefits, but I really think that it's important to mention something about public trust in law enforcement. And so I would say, I would add, and this is the thing I feel the most strongly about, is the purpose is to identify the possible costs and benefits, and that sentence you've got, while continuing to rebuild and enhance public trust in equitable law enforcement. I think that's really important to have in here.
Where are you?
Well, the area that I would put, I don't care where you put it. I just think we ought to recognize as we're issuing an RFP that that's...
Where are you reading from?
I'm reading from section page packet, page 8, section 3, the third paragraph in that first sentence. We talk about the purpose, and so I thought that would be one place you could fit it, but I don't care where we mention it. As long as we're letting potential consultants know that trust in equitable law enforcement is as important to us as reining in costs. If we're not keeping all the public safe, that would not be a good outcome. In terms of the public engagement section, which is packet page 9, I mean, I really don't feel like it's important to say exactly where to put these things, but we talk about a process that's going to engage the public, section A4, and we talk about looking at gathering input about public perceptions and concerns on the realignment, but it seems to me we've got to start from a place of what are the perceptions and concerns about our current structure, as well as that possible realignment, because people will come and if they criticize what we come up with, we won't then be able to call on, well, what is it that people are concerned about? Why are we looking to change? And it may be that the primary concern is costs, but let's hear that from people. In terms of how we gather that input, B2, we talk about having one input session, one public input session, which I assume is going to be in a centralized location. But it seems to me, and so it's likely to be in the district, in the area I represent, which is the city of Ithaca. But it seems to me we might want to have more than one in more than one location and at more than one date. So at a minimum, two or more input sessions.
Go, can I just comment? Just
yeah.
Under objectives number 4, public engagement, this is where we are asking the consultant to help us design a public input process so that once this report comes out, what are good and appropriate ways to gather public input about these options and the result of the report. So that's what number 4 is about. Give us a good process for gathering public comments and input about these options. That's number 4. Under B, that's the public input that would occur during the course of the consultant's pros and cons study. And there, it suggested that there be one opportunity for a public input session during the course of the consultant's pros and cons study.
Well, so again, I thank you. I understand that. It just seems to me that's an awfully shallow bench to base a potential realignment of an area that is so central to our existence here. Our public safety is such a central area. It's responsible for such a large part of our budget, the city's budget, and the other entities here. That's my input. You can take it, and the committee can take it and do what it wants to with this. In terms of the membership of the committee that's ultimately going to decide how are we proceeding, I'm interested in who the Law Enforcement Services Steering Committee will be. Is that the same committee we've got that doesn't include a lot of elected representation at this point. And I don't see anything in here, but I may have missed it, in terms of whether we're gathering staff input at all, the people who are out there working these beats, or road patrol sections of town. And then I think I have one more. Just that we're talking about a presentation to report back. We're talking about our presentation to county officials, and it seems to me we have to have these consultants report back to all of the governing bodies that are going to have to make a decision about buying into this. So there's my quick input. I had a lot more, but those are the things I think were the most important in each of those realms.
Peter Stein.
Yeah, just a general comment. I'm starting to get worried about this. I mean, it's sounding more and more like Brexit. The words we, I, what are we going to do? What are they going to do? They go around. But we and I or Joe are not going to control this. We can sit around this room and say, yeah, the right thing to do is to have a county police force, and all the other ones get disbanded. We might think that, but I seriously doubt if the other members of the group are going to think that that's the right way to look at it. So as far as I'm concerned, this is much too early to actually bring up these complex issues as to what is it going to mean for Cayuga Heights not to have their own police force, but to have it done by the county. What's that going to mean? They have to decide that for themselves. There's no way that we can force them out of their own police force. So it seems to me that what we ought to be doing now is not to try to ask all of these unanswerable questions. I mean, it's not so easy to get public input. You get public input from 2% of the public. That's what your public input does. I think we ought to concentrate on figuring out what the driving force is. The driving force is better policing and less money. Those are the driving forces. And we ought to concentrate on that. And then once we have somehow reliable numbers or quasi-reliable numbers, then figure out exactly where we go from there. But we not try to get the other people on our side before the basic question that we're trying to find out is done. So that's just a comment that I have.
Anna Kellis?
I'm going to keep it quick because Carol actually covered my two questions, but I just wanted a little bit of clarification. One is, have you guys thought about the steering committee and who would be on it, just to give us a little feedback?
It needs more thought. So we've had a working group to develop the RFP. It has a city councilor and it has a county legislator. Peter Stein is on that group. I think we need to think about whether that's the same group that will evaluate the responses to the RFP. I think it probably needs
a little more robust.
Yeah, and it needs some village representation because, frankly, the current RFP committee doesn't. We did do two open line conference calls with villages a couple of weeks ago to get their input. But let's call that a work in progress, Anna. By the time we get to public safety, I hope that we've got a better idea of what the
I'd love to see as the lead agency maybe a few more legislators as represent. I don't know how that, but that's just my thought. And the other actually was also on B2 on packet page 9, I'm sorry. And the one thought I had also about the one session was, at least my experience in advocacy and outreach, is that when we do have one large public session, there are groups that don't necessarily feel always welcome, and sometimes we assume that they don't have any input, but it's more that we actually have to reach out to them in order to get that input. So sort of concurring a bit, and I think maybe I'd like to, as a group, think through that a little bit more. I'd love for it to say just sessions, personally, for now, and that at least leaves the door open because it's the impression that we're giving the bidders so that they at least know that that is kind of the direction that we're going and that we really are intending to be inclusive. It's just a small adjustment, but I'd love to see that. And otherwise, really well done.
Martha, then Rich.
I had circled myself on that line about a public input session. So, of course, $50,000 is not a lot of money. So we might have to really running a public input session is probably not the main thing that these consultants will do that we can't do. We want to hire people to do stuff we can't do. We can do the other stuff. So they may need to focus on data. And Peter, the whole point of this is to get the information that you said we can't decide on this until we get figures and data. Well, that's what this is for. So this is, you know, to look at whatever the metrics are, you know. Chautauqua County used to have 20 police agencies. They now have, like, three. So what's that experience been like? And how can that be measured? How can that be judged? There are other places like that. So we can't do that. And the we here, we're the lead agency, and the city and the villages have agreed to that. Somebody has to hold the steering wheel. But obviously there needs to be a lot of collaborative input on this. But I think this is an important step. I don't think we should expect, you know, for $50,000 in 6 months, I don't think we should expect complete and perfect information. We may need to do more based on what we hear from them, but it's a good start.
Rich?
I just was going to ask for clarification. Earlier when I said I didn't see any real uproar about the idea of studying this issue, and frankly, as a legislator, it seems really responsible for us to be looking at this issue. But when I said that, Leslin, I thought I heard you say that's not true. And if you're aware of information of people in the community who think we shouldn't be studying this, if you could share that, I'm wrong, and that this really is a contentious issue to look at it, I'd like to know.
Okay. Joe, is there anything else you want to report on tonight?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Dooley, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, I did, but I don't raise it high enough, I realize.
Sorry, I missed it.
I appreciate Martha mentioning that one of my concerns was the absence of mention of the college communities. That was one of the things I was going to bring up. I also was curious about jail or holding facilities. That's not mentioned, and yet that is an important piece, and it ties into mental health concerns also and drug use. So I'm not sure whether holding facilities should be included in this or not. And I have enough questions that I was convinced that I should not take this opportunity to deal with them. I will try to talk one-on-one with both the county administrator and anyone else I should talk to. As far as tonight's being the time for public input, I saw nothing on our agenda that indicated that if the public wants to comment on this, they should come and comment under our privilege of the floor. If that's what was intended, I don't know how that message got out. So maybe you can explain that.
Joe?
Yeah, at the suggestion of the legislature, it was put on the agenda with the RFP in the agenda packet. So it was a part of the publicly posted agenda, including the RFP itself, so people could see the RFP and come to judgment on it. We also, I know Marcia alerted all the media to this, so it was out there. It was posted on our webpage that this is going to be a special item of discussion tonight. And I think that included an invitation to the public if they wanted to weigh in. I can't remember how it was worded. But I
certainly missed it. I missed it on the local news anyway.
Okay, can we move on? We'll go to county.
I mean, people can come to.
Okay. Let's go to Will. He hasn't spoken yet, and then Martha.
Thank you.
And I apologize, Joe. You skirted right from your discussion of the courts into the jail study, and I did have a question on that, which was, what do you see the next step after that report is put forth?
The court report?
Yes.
TCOG actually commissioned the report. So the next step will be a presentation at TCOG. They'll need to decide whether to accept that report or not. I'm assuming that they will. I think that the challenge is going to be to instill this within the justice system, within the town and village courts. They've been very engaged in this process all along. They're certainly following what's happening. But the exercise is going to be to get out to each one of them to explain what's in here, the expectations that are created by this report. So it's mostly a local effort. There's a recommendation or two in there that will come for the state to change legislation that will allow some other things to happen. I should say, too, and again, the report's not done, so I'm probably out of school here, but there's kind of a near-term recommendation. But the report will also include some aspirational things for down the road, which would include either a diversion of all misdemeanor cases, things that the jail and bail cases, into a central court, or the creation of a district court system down the road. So that will be kind of the long term. There will be a long term statement about that in the report as well. But back to your question, first to TCOG, and then somehow we need to get to the individual town and village justices and talk to them about what's in here and try to get them to subscribe to the recommendations.
So were there to be support for the idea of creating a special court for DWI, does that necessitate state authorization?
No, and that's how they threaded the needle. That was the one thing, and Scott Miller has done a really nice job in doing research there. The belief of the group, that's a very bright group, is that this can happen. If it has the support of the OCA or the chief judge, then it doesn't need statute to implement. It can just be done.
Thank you.
Martha?
As for public comment on this RFP, people should send comments to you, Joe, or?
They should.
So if any members of the public want to look at this and they have comments, they can contact Joe. And is this available in a Word document so we could, I mean, some people might have small comments, I mean, at least for legislators, if we want to mark up.
For legislators, it certainly could be.
To mark up if we, because I said I have little things that I didn't want to take time with tonight. And the Public Safety Committee meeting is 3:30 July 21st, Thursday, July 21st, in this room. There's public comment then, too. So all that's available.
Okay. We're on an interesting journey here. And it's one of the things that Tompkins County does well, and that's to take controversial issues and study them. And sometimes we move ahead, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we hit a home run, sometimes we drag our feet a little bit. But this is something we ought to be talking about, and we're beginning. Thanks, Joe. County Attorney is Jonathan Wood.
Just briefly, as promised, I supplied all of the legislators with an update on litigation. Please feel free to contact me and ask any questions that you have on that. Also wanted everybody to know that we did finish the sale of that small triangle in Elmira Road that the legislature authorized a couple meetings ago, which coincided nicely with June 30th, the last day of the lease. So that transaction is completed. That's my report.
Questions? Rick Snyder is our finance director.
I'm sorry. Jonathan, it's been a while since we've seen a handout from you with updates on continuing cases. I missed them.
It's right here.
It's in the red packet.
In your red folder.
Somewhere. I haven't looked in my red folder. I beg your pardon. Thank you.
Sure. Rick.
Thank you, Mike. Being passed out now on the way around are
two reports that I'd like to bring to your attention tonight. One is the sales tax report for May, and the other is a review of the recent bond sales that have taken place over the last week or so. And while those are being circulated, I'd like to announce that today Lisa Schott became a new employee who is working in the finance department on the Treasury Division. She was hired a couple of weeks ago, but had to take some time before she began her first day with us, so she began today in our Treasury Division. We also hired another individual named Julie Fergus in the Accounting Department, who will begin, it's approximately July 27th or thereabouts, towards the end of the month. So we are staffing up and replacing some of those vacancies that we had in the Finance Department. I just thought I would let you know of us moving forward with some of those new hires. I think what I'd like to talk about first is the recent ban and bond sales. So if you look at the report that I handed out, I'm going to bring to light the certain ingredients of those bond sales, something that I have been working on, along with Joe and Jonathan and a number of staff, have been working on this most recent bond and ban sale for the last 6 months. So it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort to orchestrate this and put it together. The first section is on the ban or bond anticipation notes. It mentions that they were in the amount of $5,299,000, and the interest rate that we borrowed or got that for was at 0.958%. So that's just a little bit less than 1%. Right below there in the next paragraph, I've compared the last five ban issuances going back to July of 2013. You'll see they ranged anywhere from about 0.18% right up to 0.76%. So you'll notice that this offering that we just closed on is a bit higher, and that's just a result of the ever-increasing pressure on the interest rate for short-term money going up. That's on the 1 year or less. But our financial advisor did mention that anything less than 1% for the county when you're borrowing money for 1 year is really a great deal. So we were fortunate to be in the market at this time. The purchaser was Raymond James and Associates. I've listed some of the projects that these bands are paying for. One of them is the refinancing of a note from last year for the Pine Tree Road reconstruction project. And then it provides partial funding for the next list of projects, the Dodge Road Bridge project, the Mallaryville Road Bridge and Red Mill Road Bridge project, the Cottekin Road and Burns Road intersection project, library improvements, and the Ellis Hollow Road Phase 3 project. We closed on this particular ban on June 28th, just last week, and we will receive the money later this week. It'll be on Thursday, the 7th. The next section, Section 2, is on the new money bonds dated July 7th, 2016. As I mentioned in an email and I believe at one other meeting, that we recently had another Moody's bond rating that Joe and I participated in. We maintained our AA1 stable rating, and that allowed us to sell $2,560,000 of public improvement bonds on June 23rd. Our net interest rate for the bonds, which goes out many, many years as compared to the one-year band, that interest rate was 1.449%. So basically, they sold at about 1.5%. They sold to Raymond James and Associates, and the term of the bonds of this particular issue is 11 years. Then in the next paragraph, I list comparison of interest rates going back the last four more years, and the interest rates, you can see, vary from 2.4%, 2.7%, 3.4%, 1.8. So if you take it all into consideration and looked at the five-year period, this particular bond offering was the best
net interest rate that we've achieved over this five-year period at 1.449. The proceeds of these particular long-term bonds are used for that list of projects, which I've recorded at the bottom of the page, on page one there. You can read that yourself. And then I wanted to briefly discuss the sales tax report, which is on the second handout that came around to you. The sales tax looked very, very good in April. If you'll remember, we had over a 3% increase for the month of April. But now you're looking at a table for the month of May. And if you look in that center section that's marked county, the county allocation, you can see that the month of May was down about 4.28% compared to last year. So we've tripped up a bunch in May, reminiscent of the first couple of months of the year. April was a stellar month, but now May has come back again to be another downturn. If you've listened much at all to the regional or national economic news and what's happening with consumer spending, that this is pretty much nationwide and certainly regionally. I do know some counties that have had a couple of very, very good months, and they're showing positive net increases for the year in sales tax. We are not. So I'd like to end, if you go to the right-hand column that looks at the year-to-date 2016 to year-to-date 2015, the county's portion now totals $12,379,642 compared to last year when it was $12,559,533. This represents a decrease of $179,891 year over year, or a negative 1.43% increase. And that concludes my report for tonight, unless you have some questions for me. Thank you.
Questions for Rick. Martha?
Yeah, I just remember that this is year over year for each month, and the Ithaca Commons reconstruction was finished in August, right? Last year. Yeah, okay, so we still haven't hit we still haven't hit the comparisons to the Commons being open. So I've been wondering all these months, like, gee, why is the city doing so much better? And I realized that we were comparing the Commons open to the Commons under construction.
That's true.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome.
Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Jim Dennis.
Yes, Mike. Oh, Michael, thank you. I'd like to withdraw Reso 6421.
That's Resolution D?
It is.
That's withdrawn. We don't have a consent agenda tonight. That's interesting. We're going to move right along. I'd like a couple of folks from departments here tonight. Let's see if we can't send them home. Jim, let's stay with you and go to Resolution C.
Let me find my yellow copy. And it is Ban the Box, And it's a criminal conviction disclosure, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna Kellis. Discussion. Jim?
The county has been looking at this since middle of last year. It was brought to our attention many times, and when Nate was the chair of the Public Safety Committee, it came to the Public Safety Committee. I was the vice chair. I ended up moving it to the budget committee. And one of the rare occasions that we do at county legislature committee meetings, we had a member of the press come to the table and talk to us about it. And that would be Carrie Blakinger, who has since left us and gone to the Daily News and is going in a completely different direction in doing her job there. This has been looked at by the personnel department, by Steve Estes.
other people. We have done the due diligence in checking with all of our customers. In other words, the people, the organizations that use our civil service, school districts, towns, villages. And we have recovered their comments. And for the most part, they are in agreement with what we're trying to do. Part of all of this is also we have 715 employees in our operation, 720, and there's nearly a couple of hundred, 175, who are not covered by Ban the Box. They are people that we do background checks on as a matter of course. And it's going to be a slight change in the way we do some things because of our online application form. School districts, for example, hire teachers, teacher aides, everyone is fingerprinted. They have to go through extreme background checks to get hired in most of these. Town of Ithaca, other places have dealt with our staff and feel satisfied that what we're doing will work for them also. So. Amy is here, and Steve worked on this. And Amy Guerrari is here, so if people have questions, have at it.
Amy, do you want to speak tonight?
I forwarded out some supplemental.
I need to have you go to a. You could go to the end and sit down if it's easier for you.
And while Amy is going there, there's a host of information that has come out over the last few days, and we had asked, Michelle was going to include things. She did that. Things came from Steve about the whole business of Ban the Box and all the background thing that we're doing. And so Amy is here to obviously talk about that and answer any questions.
Amy Guerra is our Commissioner of Personnel.
Good evening. Earlier today, I disseminated some information to clarify some questions that folks had regarding some information that had previously been disseminated. And we also handed out a copy, hard copy, for those of you who might not have received your email this afternoon, clarifying some of those questions. So I would be happy to answer any additional questions.
Martha Robertson.
Thanks. Thanks, Amy, for doing this and for having your staff work on it. I do have a question. So on your handout here, the middle of the page, it says further explanation, the conviction question will be deferred, and all that sounds great. And then the process and the next paragraph, the process and criteria for such review process will remain as it currently is in accordance with civil service law, corrections law sections 752 and 753, and other related employment laws and regulations. So that suddenly was like, wait a minute, it sounds like you just said how it's going to change, and now it says we're going to do it as we have been doing it. So I'm okay. Missing something.
Sure. So I had responded to your email, and basically, I apologize for any confusion. The question and the process of asking about convictions is going to either remain at the front of the hiring process in the application itself, or it will be removed through Ban the Box for positions where it's not required to be asked up front. But either way, the evaluation of someone's suitability for employment, that process will remain the same as it currently is. I referenced, I believe, in the handout that we follow all of the various laws and regulations to protect the rights of individuals from discrimination based on conviction status, in particular corrections law, which I had provided a copy of the criteria. It really has a checklist of sorts that we do review to ascertain whether or not a conviction truly should be a bar to employment or not, absent any laws or regulations that would make for a bar for employment on the onset.
Okay, so I understand. So a corrections officer or a sheriff's deputy is barred if they have a conviction on a misdemeanor or a felony, is that right? That by law?
Not all felonies or misdemeanors are an absolute bar, but the question needs to be asked up front for those positions,
right, okay,
and certain other positions. All others, it'll be deferred until later in the process,
okay,
to allow the candidate to...
Right. Since the majority of our positions don't have that kind of bar, so the default really is asking later. Okay.
Yes.
All right. And then in Steve Essie's memo, it's packet page 27 for us, you've got findings.
Mm-hmm.
Public officer titles would not be affected by a ban. It is believed that the county's electronic job applications could be programmed to ask about prior convictions only for specific job titles. There would be the undetermined cost associated with this reprogramming task. Does this mean that we're going to do that?
Yes, we are going to. Yes, we are going to implement it into our electronic application process by coding certain job titles so that when an individual applies for, say, corrections officer, their application that they complete will have the box and ask the question. If they apply for administrative assistant, they will not have the box, and therefore they'll go through the entire hiring process and approval and interview, and if they are a finalist candidate at that point, they will be asked to submit a confidential supplemental sheet asking the question. The information will be forwarded directly to the personnel department to protect that information from the public and from other folks. So.
I thought that was a good step.
Yes.
Now, finally, private employers, I've heard people say we should require this for all employers, including private. I mean, I assume you're shaking your head. Is that something we can even do, or
would you like to speak to that, Jim? We've discussed it at committee meeting.
It was always my impression, and it was always my feeling that we were talking about county employees. We were not talking about private sector employees. Private sector people make their own rules, and I did not think that we should be in the position of trying to make rules for Cornell University and Ithaca College and Morris Chain or whoever. That if we could do a process for our 715 employees plus all of our other customers, we would be ahead of the game, at least.
I agree. I think the first step is to do it ourselves and see how it works. And it's not especially with the other municipalities and school districts, it's a significant number of people. But so I guess it's a question to Jonathan. Is it something that we could do? I don't even know. I mean, there's.
We discussed it. I'm not sure I can say definitely yes or definitely no. I believe that some municipalities have tried to do it in other states. It represents a really almost impossible enforcement issue as a practical matter. Mm-hmm. So it would be sort of a feel-good kind of thing even if we did it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anna?
Just one question, and thank you, Martha, because that was actually one of my questions. And what I had understood is that it's legally possible the implementation might not be possible, I appreciate that clarification. On packet page 27, in section 2, it says, therefore, as a part of the legislature's consideration of a ban, it is recommended that these stakeholder jurisdictions be informed of the potential change and offered an opportunity to comment.
Yes.
And I was wondering if they've been informed and there's been discussion, there's been input, what the commentary has been?
Yes, they certainly have, and thank you for the question. Stephen Estes and I held conference calls and invited all the municipalities to participate. And those who did not participate, we followed up with emails, allowing them comment period. We prepared a summary report of their comments, and the vast majority had little or no concern about our implementation of the Ban the Box. and felt that it would not cause any significant detriment to their operations or process. And we also had assured them that we would do our best to streamline the process so that it did not cause any undue delays, and we don't expect it to.
Just as a follow-up to that, have we talked to any people from people who've reengaged in the community, previous felons who've experienced sort of trauma from this process and what their feedback is and whether this is enough and whether they feel it would be helpful in guiding our outline of what we're putting forward?
Do you want to speak to it? Or? Well, I think we can add to it, please. But we do have several programs throughout the county that serve to assist that population in finding employment through our workforce development, through a probationary department, and there are various, you know, programs in place to support them. As far as actually speaking with the individuals to find out what their experience has been, we have not undertaken that.
Or their input on this.
Right. But, yes, please.
Recall what Jim said about kind of one of the starting points of this whole process, which was a presentation by Carrie Blakinger, who's had the experience and really brought a lot of insights to the conversation toward the beginning of all this. So it's one person, but I think she is very capable of speaking for folks in a similar position.
Thank you, Joe. That was when I had first started. That was some time ago, and I was just coming in after the fact. And also, I would like to add that we've done extensive research on the practices of other counties, cities, and New York State itself, the state civil service, that have implemented Ban the Box, and as well as other state practices. And so through that research, you know, we've garnered some ideas and some feedback that they've gained through their outreach to that population. So.
I have Carol, then Rich, then Mike.
Yeah, I wanted to, I hope that Carrie, that somebody alerted Carrie to the fact that we were doing this tonight, because she really was instrumental, and you really couldn't have asked for a better spokesperson for this cause than her story, and she's been on national panels. She may have been to the White House talking about this, I'm not sure. I wanted to thank, Jim, thank you for you know, convening the committee and getting this going. I think this is, you know, you've done a really good job collecting the information, and thanks to our staff. I was at the first meeting, and I know there were a lot of questions and concerns about how we would be able to move this forward, and I think that, you know, you came to with an open mind and were willing to we really did move the needle. We also, though, took input along the way from, if I had one particularly very vocal constituent who was very concerned about how we would do this and what the process would be to make sure that we continued to ensure public safety and that this be a written process at the end, and I think that you've also responded well to those concerns. And thanks to Martha for raising the point that you did. So my notes say that at the beginning of this process, what we talked about were three different ways to go on this. One was to start as we are by doing this for ourselves, and see how it goes. The other was the other end of the spectrum and requiring it for everybody across the county. And we have laws where we do require things of people and businesses, and we make them stick. And the other was a middle way. Well, not middle exactly, but the third way was to require this not only of ourselves, but of those who have contracts and do business with the county, and certainly do it with county, with public money. And I do have concerns that we have chosen, you know, not to really address that. And I would like to suggest that in, say, a year after trying this ourselves, that we maybe set some particular period of time at the end of which we would at least consider, that would come back to this body to consider whether to take it to that next step that could include, what did I write? The contract. Well, people who have conducting business with Tompkins County, its departments, and or agencies. And we'd have to look into that. But I would, I'm almost considering a further resolved, an amendment that would further resolve that after some period of time, we would reconsider how it's going. We certainly want to hear how it's going after a year or whatever period of time you think is appropriate to hear. So,
Jim, was that a question?
Comments from other people first.
Jim, did you have a question?
No, I have a comment.
Okay, then. Well, are you making an amendment, Carol?
Do I see any nods? Would I get a second if I did?
Are you looking at me?
No, well,
no, not for me.
If I hear from one other person that it's something we'd want to put in at this point, as opposed to just asking that this come back to us in a year.
Let me get the other comments, and you think about it. If you want to move it, I'll come back to you, Carol. Jim, I've got Rich next, then Mike, and then you.
Okay, thank you. If you could speak to the issue of criminal background checks. Are those done uniformly on all applicants or just some applicants? And what's the process?
Currently, a criminal background check, one that involves checking into the criminal history records, either locally, statewide, or countrywide, or further, those kinds of checks are limited right now to public safety positions, so the sheriff's department would conduct those true criminal background checks on their hires by law. We've not instituted such expansive criminal history checks for other positions unless they are titles that are required by law. And there are certain titles that do, like I had mentioned earlier, where there is a bar from employment with a certain conviction.
Okay. Mike Ziegler.
I wanted to thank the county for doing this. I think this is a great idea. I mean, I'm certainly going to vote for it. I just, before I vote for it, I just thought it an interesting point to bring up that, you know, here we are trying to ban the box for people who are being barred from employment, basically, to an extent, for people that we know that have committed a crime. And yet, in that same space, I know a lot of people who speak about, you know, withdrawing rights from people who haven't been convicted of any crime. You know, I hear talk about people, well, they want to register speech. They want to license journalists. They want to, you know, charge people for certain speech that they find objectionable. They want to take people's Second Amendment rights away who haven't been charged with anything. They want to do Fourth Amendment rights. They want to take those away so that we can do no-knock raids by the police. So I just find it interesting that here we have a group of people that we're trying to, you know, get back into the workforce and give rights to, and yet there's a whole bunch of people who have never been charged with anything, and yet there's a lot of people in the country right now that would like to pull those rights away. So just something I thought interesting and wanted to point out. Thank you.
Jim Dennis, then Anna.
Amy, what is the effective date of this? If we pass this, what is the effective date?
We can move pretty swiftly with integrating the process with our online vendor. We've had preliminary meetings with them. What will be the most time-consuming aspect of the process is to code those titles so that it prompts a specific application, but
ballpark.
But we can
a ballpark date.
Ballpark. I would say we could do it within a month to 2 months tops.
And my second comment was, I to Carol in one respect, the budget committee, the personnel department, is part of the budget committee, and clearly, I don't know who's going to chair the committee next year, but I have another 18 months here, and
I will certainly ask a year from now what has happened. I think that's paramount Absolutely. To what we're doing. If we're going to do this, we have to keep a record of what we're doing,
yes.
and we will do that. I'm sure the department will, that will be a high priority for them. You know, because
Absolutely.
It was a big change for the department to do this, and they'll want to know what the effect has been over time. So,
absolutely, and just as we do track data, such as you know, candidates that are disqualified for a variety of reasons from employment, we would continue to track such data, and we would report on that to our committee, you know, so that would provide a mechanism to gauge the effectiveness and whether this has made an impactful difference or not, for sure.
Let me go to Leslin. She hasn't spoken yet, and then I'll come back for a second comment to Anna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a matter of fact, Jim Dennis said what I wanted to say just in terms of the committee looking at this again after a certain period of time. And thank you all so much for the work you've done on this. The City of Ithaca did do this already, and it might be worth it also to see what kind of success they're having mm-hmm. or what the impact has been in terms of their applications or mm-hmm. how much work it's cost for them, et cetera, mm-hmm. so that we have something to compare to.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Anna?
I was just curious, just for informational, for myself and maybe Leslin, I'd be curious, or, and anybody here from that comment as part of the committee, just why it was set as just the county versus the county agencies. Not that I'm just curious. I figured there's probably some administrative reasons why we're starting with one rather than.
Well, it's the county departments as well as all the municipalities that we serve. So we're the civil service agency for all of the towns and villages.
I mean, just not the contractors or subcontractors that we work with, our agencies.
Yeah. Again, I would defer back to comments made by Jim Dennis, I believe, and others, that it would be logistically difficult to manage that.
Okay. That was
and that would not be something, first of all, we didn't discuss it. Secondly, it would not be something that I think would be manageable within our operation to be mm-hmm. able to look at those kinds of things.
Great. That was just my question.
All right.
Yeah,
okay.
That answers it. And then my other comment, I just want to respond because I appreciate your comment, and, of course, we always respond to each other back and forth in this game, standing on ethically on two different sides. But I think it was a really important point, so I just needed to respond. As a teacher of public health at Cornell, this comes up all the time, and I think that I would just say that our you know, we're elected to create a system that protects that balances the right of the individual, you know, and their freedoms with the safety of mm-hmm. the population as a whole. I mean, that's the delicate balance. So, you know, that it brings up the massive question of where do you stand on the Second Amendment with respect to balancing individual rights versus the safety of the public. So mm-hmm. I would say it's not easy, but it's not black and white. It's not on one side or the other. So we'll continue to probably have that argument continuously as we both stand in the legislature, I think.
I want to go to Dooley, and then I'll go back to Jim, and then I'd really like to vote on this. Dooley?
I wanted to commend Steve Estes for his clear write-up on the details. And I would like to see an addition to this resolution, unless you can explain to me why it's not there, that would say, resolve further that the Commissioner of Personnel report back to the legislature on the first year's experience with this.
I don't have a problem with that.
So then I would move to amend the resolution to say that.
Motion to amend to add that language. Is there a second? Seconded by Anna.
Well, I heard that it was friendly. It's friendly to both of us.
Okay. If it's friendly, without objection, it'll be added. Jim?
Two comments. I thought Leslin was going to say this when she raised her hand, but WDIC has worked on this for long before I got involved, and they've been talking about it for a very long time. So it didn't rise to the level of the legislature in the sense that they didn't propose it, but clearly the background and that discussion started well before we were, you know, where we are now. And let me just finally say, and thank you for that, Leslin, and your committee, that I think the department has done a good job with this, and they had to, they went slow, and I think in doing that, they covered almost all the bases that we were supposed to cover to get to where we are. So I appreciate that. I think the legislature does, and you know, I think it's a good thing for us moving ahead.
Thank you.
Carol, I said I would come back to you.
I'm good.
Good? Thanks. Okay, I'm ready to vote.
Mr. Chairman, yes, Leslin. Add something just really quickly. Thank you, Jim, for that. You know, people were talking about other agencies throughout the county. One of the things I need people to remember is that a lot of those places don't use the application that we do. Mm-hmm. So there's no place to ban anything, really. People send a resume and a cover letter when you're applying for a job. So just keep that in mind. The ones we're referring to are the ones for whom we provide the service, the civil service applications. But most other places don't use that application, and so there isn't a place to ban something.
That was a great answer to my question.
It is.
Ready to vote. On the resolution with the amendment, friendly amendment, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Jim.
Great. Thank you very much, everyone.
Yay. Well done.
Let's go next to
Lee is here.
Lee. Yes, that's the one I'm going to go to. I believe Lee is here for Resolution E. Peter Stein.
May I ask one thing? Are you going to come back to me for a budget
yes.
committee report later?
I am.
Oh, thank you. Okay. So I'll go home and come back later.
Okay. So I'd like to move ID 6410, authorization to accept a Homeland Security grant to amend the capital program, Department of Emergency Response.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna.
And we have an expert Peter? Who can answer any questions.
What are you looking for, Lee? Lee's on the other side.
He's
over here.
Yeah.
All right. Are there questions? Are we ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Now we'll go back to the head of the committee reports on the agenda, and we will go to Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
We have not met since the last legislature meeting. Our next meeting is tomorrow, 3:30, in this chambers.
Questions for Dan? We're still the only county in this area that doesn't allow fireworks sales for sparklers, right?
Another reason to be proud.
We've lost the sales tax on women's products, paper products, but we don't have
another
to
reason to be
it.
Proud.
No sales tax on them damn fireworks. Gonna have some sales tax, $179,000.
Jim?
Yeah, the fireworks thing. You know, will we ever bring that back up?
I personally have no intention of bringing that back up,
but
any legislator is welcome
okay,
to.
Okay, well, I'll try to remember that. My comment is that I was in Yates County, I was in Schuyler County, I was in Tioga County over the last, and there were tents set up. And tree, you know, and tables and trucks, and there were people. There were lines of people buying these things, and I'm thinking sales tax, you know. But
there you go.
All right,
Mike.
Thank you, Dan.
Mike.
Oh, another question, Will.
I wasn't planning to bring this to people's attention, but today I just happened to read an article about a young child in Texas who. Got it in his mind to create a sparkler bomb, and he lost much of his body. So these things are not utterly safe, and I feel very good that we have resisted this this impulse just for convenience or sales tax to do it.
Okay. Just thought we needed a little controversy here this afternoon.
You succeeded.
You started.
I did. Okay, let's go to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. Well, let's see. We had our committee met on June 15th, so we I did report at June 21st meeting. Our next committee meeting is July 20th at 3 o'clock in this room. And then I've got a couple of resolutions and an appointment that would have been on the consent agenda, but we didn't say do consent. So let me start with the Homeownership Oversight Committee. Judy Malis was recommended by the committee. So I'd like to move that. We don't usually do it like this, right? But that's right. I'm just saying here I move Judy Malis to be appointed.
You're moving the appointment. Now, that appointment resume is in the packet. Is that
right.
Correct?
Yes.
We'll need a second to appoint.
Anyone want to? Come on, guys.
All right. Peter Stein.
What page in the packet are we on?
Well, your packet got separated. You know, there's this bunch of papers. Then there's the green map. And then there's the RFP thing about Ludlowville. And then there's another section that has advisory board appointments. So it's the last section.
So the Homeownership Oversight Committee.
Right.
So it's been moved and seconded. Discussion. Does anyone need an executive session to discuss this particular appointment? Carol?
So I think I may need to recuse myself from this.
It's staffed by the committee's staffed by INHS.
Oh, there's he's staff. Okay.
We'll allow you to recuse yourself.
Thank you.
Anyone else ready to vote on this?
Then I do.
You got a question, Rich?
No. I was getting ready to vote on this.
I like ready to vote. All those in favor of the appointment, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed and one abstention.
Okay. Resolution A, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number something of 2016, acceptance of grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to conduct the Ludlowville Stream Bank Stabilization Project. And that's document 6403. I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion on the neg deck. Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Resolution B, document 6404, acceptance of grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to conduct the Ludlowville Stream Bank Stabilization Project. And I so move.
Seconded by Dave. Discussion? Go ahead, Dan.
I just had a question on packet page 16. There's some information, also packet page 24, some information about the site. One of them refers to 0.4 acres. The other refers to the site as 430 acres. I was just trying to get an understanding of why those differences. Well, yeah, and then on the map, there's this huge area outlined as the impact site, and the other one just talks about stream banks. So I was just trying to get some understanding.
I don't know. Okay. I'm lost on the.
Well, so one's the map, which is packet page 24. The other one's packet page 16 on the EI and the environmental impact statement.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. 16 or 19?
Oh. So I think I may be able to tackle this.
16. Towards the bottom, 3A, it says total acreage of the site, 0.4 acres. But the map says project area, 430 acres.
What, 22, packet page 22?
Well, I think the work is constrained. The work is not happening on 430 acres. I think it's going to impact that whole area. That's my sense.
Can I take a stab?
Sure.
Yeah, so the area that we're actually going to stabilize is a smaller area than the area that is potentially impacted by the flooding.
Okay. Thank you.
And there's a local match, and the town is town highway, and the town is involved as well. So. But it's a great grant that takes care of a very big chunk of it.
Are we ready to vote on that?
Yeah.
All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
That's all I have. That's my report. Thank
Any
you.
Questions for Martha? Let's go to Charter Review Committee. Julie Kiefer is the chair.
We met sometime before the holiday and discussed three things: whether the sheriff should be an elective position or an appointed position, what the language should be relative to the mental health commissioner's appointment, and I can't remember the third thing, which is embarrassing. No decisions were made. We were missing one member. I hope we'll be at full strength at our next meeting and we'll actually deal with these things and get very close to closure. We're still doing revisits.
Questions? Thank you, Julie. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. We're back to you, Jim.
Thank you, Michael. I wanted to give my best view of where we are in the annual performance review of legislative directs, and that is the four people that you can see here in the room. And Steve has worked with the committee. Steve Estes has worked with the committee. We have in our possession now a computerized version of all of ways to evaluate the four directs. It also has a portion that the people who are the four directs can also talk about their own goals and put their words in all of that. There have been emails flying around over the last 48 hours, and I've read them with some interest, and there was one particularly stuck out, was that somehow one person on the legislature was going to make a determination about how we would proceed after we collect all the information. That's not going to happen that way. How I view this is Steve will collect the information, it will come back to the budget committee, and then we will set up a time to meet with each one of the people, Rick, John, Joe, Kathy, as a group, and we will talk to them about what the evaluation is. And I will invite all the legislators. I am going to hope that people can come. I will not change dates. When I set the dates, I will, as many people that can show up, please show up. But that's how we're going to proceed in all of that. And then we'll wind it all up and give a report. Everyone will know, all of us will know how we evaluated the four people that worked for us. I think that's a process that we're going to follow. And it's I think it will work. And the best part of it's going to be that all of you are going to have your input on the site, and then the conversation with the four people. Because I'm very interested in hearing what they have to say about their jobs, the way they do their jobs, and I'm also interested in hearing what we can ask people, ask these four people, how do you feel? How do you feel that you're doing? How can we help you do your job better? Those kinds of things. And I've been here 10 years. We've evaluated three times in 10 years. And I'll take some responsibility as being a lax committee chair, but I'm not taking responsibility for the other people before me. And I think Joe has been evaluated twice in the 10 years, and we did one other one at one point, and when I think Martha was the chair, or Mike Plinkelaire, I don't know. But at any rate, we will attempt to make this an annual thing. But what I'm thinking right now is that to do this, you're going to have to commit. It'll take a lot of time every year, and I'm not certain we want to do that. Maybe on a every other year basis it would work, but if out loud you're going to say you're going to do this every year, you're lying to yourself to say that, because it takes a fair amount of time, and it takes a big commitment on all of your parts to go ahead and do that. So that's where it is right now.
Martha.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for clarifying that. And Amy's got the second half of the memo that she printed out for us also talks about that a little bit. So you're not saying the directs meet as a group with budget as a group. You're saying you have a separate meeting for each one of them, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right.
Unless they want to make it a...
No. And sort of average out the evaluations. Yeah. Sure. We'll grade on a curve. I know Steve Estes is on vacation. I hope nobody tells him that his survey emails went into everybody's junk folder. That's not fair. So
you weren't supposed to say that out loud.
Okay, but I found them. That's in the junk folder. Thanks to Amy for telling me where to look.
Dooley Kiefer.
Jim,
yes?
You're talking about online surveys that we should do now.
Right.
When are you looking to have all of this back into the budget committee?
Well, we would hope that it could be done, you know, within 30 days for sure. You know, everyone weigh in within 30 days.
So it would be for your August or your September budget meeting?
Probably.
September?
Well, you know, we would need to get all the information back from all of you, and then Steve could compile it in a way, and then we would have to figure out when we would do it. I'm not certain. I'm going to say the September budget meeting. It's not going to be at a normal budget meeting time, I think. When we meet with people, we will do it at their convenience pretty much. You know, I'm not going to spend I don't want to spend a whole lot of time meeting at 6 o'clock in the evening talking to these people. I would like to be able to meet with them during business hours if they can do that.
But it will be a separate meeting from your regular budget.
Yeah, hopefully.
I would encourage everyone to please get these surveys done as reasonably quickly.
Yeah, right.
I have done them myself,
right.
So I can tell you they're not onerous to do.
Yeah.
They're a reasonable number of questions. I think they're good questions, and there's a reasonable area for you to make comments.
Let me finish his thought, or at least hopefully. It's a new process we're doing by doing the computer, and it's totally different than anything we've done before. And not to say anything negative about the Obamacare rollout, but, you know, we're hoping we can get it out quicker than they did and be able to get back and add some value to the people that work for us. You know, so.
Will?
Well, I hadn't finished.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dooley.
I had one other thing. You had said that it didn't seem to be sensible to you to try to do this annually, but... insofar as our county administrator is concerned, I think he every year puts on paper some goals for himself to accomplish and then evaluates himself on how well he did. And that's an annual process. So it doesn't seem unreasonable to me that we should try to do this annually. That's all.
I've heard your comment.
Will?
Question for whomever. Mine did not go to junk mail, so I looked at it, and then I realized, well, I don't know if I have time to complete a survey. Does anybody know, is it possible to start answering things, stop, and then go back and save, or do you have to complete the whole thing in one shot? Does anybody know?
Don't know the answer to that.
I didn't hear the question, Will.
Save it midstream, but I have not.
Okay. Okay.
Anna?
Just on the comment of how frequently we should do these, I think that there's two considerations for me. One, I think the tendency is to think that an evaluation is somehow culturally inherently punitive, and I definitely don't see it that way, and as a manager, I didn't use it that way. And I found it to be a very positive experience for goal setting. And I would hope that we as a county can create that culture. And I would say that the a reason to do an annual would be not because we're questioning, but because we're setting a precedent for what Joe might want to do within the departments, for example. So that's something that we should consider about culturally how we want to establish something throughout the entire infrastructure.
Peter?
Yeah, when I was a faculty member at Cornell, I used to have, we all had an annual evaluation, and most of us didn't look forward to having that discussion. But at least the rule was from the greatest of us to the least great of us, greatest of us, we all had to go through that procedure. And to me, that was very important. And I believe that these four people are department heads, and all of the other department heads get evaluated every year. And I think it's bad for it's bad to have one group not have to go through this process every year. So I think the four people should go through the process every year like every other person that is being evaluated.
Dan?
I just looked it up. The reviews are due July 18th.
All right. Anything else?
They are due July 18th.
Jim, are you done with your report?
No, that's pretty much it. Everyone knows what the September and October and November budget dates are. Joe continues to work on that, meeting with department heads, and I do not have anything else. I'm stunned by the sales tax numbers, but not surprised, in the sense that if one looks at the U.S. economy, it's kind of halted in a lot of respects, and I think we have to be aware of those kinds of numbers moving forward, especially, or Joe does, in the budget season. So I hope it gets better.
Thank you, Jim. Let's take 10 minutes. We'll come back and finish up. Take our chairs, please.
I'm ready. Let's do more legislation.
Name some.
Let's get ready to legislate.
Please take your seats. All right, let's proceed with our standing committees. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne is chair.
Oh, Mr. Chair, thank you. We met. We talked.
Yeah.
Caesar once said,
I was thinking about what it is that happened at WDIC. I couldn't find my agenda. But I know that we did have a very lively discussion about the police consolidation RFP and wanted to convey to Joe as a committee that as we put that out, we hope that somewhere along the line in our selection process or criteria or even within the RFP itself that there is there's question and or statement that would glean for us enough information to suggest that whoever might get the contract to do this has had knowledge and experience engaging diverse communities to get information, to be able to get people's opinions if you're going to do a survey, etc. So that is one of the things that we talked about. As a matter of fact, that was the most substantive thing at our meeting that we discussed, and we did share with the county administrator or desire as a committee to make sure that diversity and inclusion is represented and responded to in the RFP. That's my report.
Questions? Thank you, Leslie. The old library committee has not met. You may have seen an article about how the developer's progress is progressing through the city process. The I guess they've been meeting with the Landmarks Commission, so they've had some discussions there. I don't know any more than what I read in the newspaper. Any questions? Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein, chairs
it. Public Safety hasn't met since my last report. We have one resolution that was passed. I'd like to move the second resolution, appropriation from the contingent fund for terminal pay, Department of Probation, and Community Justice.
Seconded by Leslin, being Claiborne. Takes a short form roll call.
Oh, you have a...
I'm sorry, you want to speak to it?
Yeah.
Oh, Dooley, your hand's up. Sorry.
Yes. since the first whereas was not crystal clear and could be misinterpreted, I checked with Pat Buchel, and I would like to recommend the first whereas read as follows. Whereas in the Department of Probation and Community Justice, one probation officer retired on May 13, 2016, and another probation officer resigned on May 20, 2016.
I find that a friendly amendment.
Is it friendly to the seconder?
Yes.
All right. Are ready to vote on the resolution as friendly amended. Friendly amended.
We're all friends here.
Clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be recorded as a no? That's unanimous. Anything else, Peter?
No, we'll meet at our usual time this month.
Thank you. Let's go to Health and Human Services Committee. Leslin McBean Claiborne again is the chair.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. The Health and Human Services Committee did not meet since our last legislature meeting. Our next meeting is July 18th, and we are appealing to everyone for our department heads for agenda items. We will continue our conversation and discussion around drug policy. I knew that the cabinet, the HHS cabinet, had been putting together sort of a list of what are the steps and processes and action items that we've been working on for years and years and years, and sort of taking a look at that. I had an opportunity to briefly talk with Seth Murtaugh, a city councilman, about a potential merge meeting with some members of that elected body and us, as well as others from our advisory board, so that we can continue a more comprehensive and involved conversation where everyone is included around where do we go next with municipal drug policy. So that's what's going on our end from HHS.
Questions? Martha?
Yeah, maybe this is a joke question. The state passed funding or a program or whatever for like six treatment programs or detox programs.
I didn't see that.
Is that probably like the six big cities in New York? I mean, is there any chance?
I know I heard about the ones downstate, but I don't know that there's anything close to us.
Frankly, I don't know.
But I did see that.
Yeah, we can dig.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met just prior to this meeting, and we have a couple of resolutions. In addition to that, we had a review of the Department of Public Works capital projects programs and their status. So my first resolution is Resolution G, document ID 6433, authorization to execute funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation with Coddington Road, highway safety improvements at Burns Road and East King Road intersections, town of Ithaca, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous.
And I also have Resolution H, document ID 6431, award of contract, Terminal Cafe at Tompkins Regional Airport, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna Kellis. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, there was a revision to this that did not get voted on in committee that should get voted on here.
And are you moving the revised version?
I'm going to move the revised version.
Satisfactory?
Fine.
Ready to vote? Anna, go ahead.
I just wanted to say really quickly for anybody who's been up at the airport and knows that it's been struggling, the second, I can't remember the exact
second
name.
Second Landing.
I'm sorry. Second Landing Cafe. One of the reasons that Mike Hall noted that it has been successful is that they've made an initiative to try and have local contracts with local companies. It's a husband and wife family, and they've made great outreach to the business park area around the airport. And I just wanted to acknowledge that it's made a huge difference, the attempt to be so local compared to the other airports that have not had a success connecting with large franchises, national companies. So I just want to applaud what they're doing and that it has been a huge success compared to previous initiatives. So something for us all to be aware of and sort of push.
Thank you. Leslin next, then Jim.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add to what Anna said. It's not just the business community that they've reached out to, but they've also reached out to the local community in general, nonprofit organizations, individuals, some individual phone calls to families, just letting people know that we exist, and a nicer menu, and so on and so forth. So I think that has sort of added as well, because I know community members who would, you know, on a Saturday morning just go up there and enjoy brunch at the airport. So they have done a really great effort in trying to reach out to people in the community. I just want to add that.
Thank you. Jim?
Heaping praise on Mike. I think it's very clever, that idea that he's going to have, that they're putting forward to reopen the runways after the paving job.
Jim, you're talking about Mike Hall.
Mike Hall,
right?
Yeah. Well, Mike Lane, you know, oh. But Mike Hall. And I thought it was a really clever move, given all the bad press that the airport suffered because they had to do that work. So I thought that was pretty cool of him to come up with that.
Okay. Anything else, Dave?
No, did we actually vote on that?
Yeah, I think we ought to vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
And that concludes my report. Thank you very much.
Transportation Committee has not met since our last meeting. We will be meeting on the 13th. Hopefully we'll be having folks from DOT down, DOT in Syracuse. Minutes of the previous meeting, June 21st.
Move them.
Lessons moved them. Seconded by Dave. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Is there any unfinished business? Anyone have a good reason to stay here any longer? Someone want to move to adjourn?
Bye.
Move.
Second? We're adjourned.